You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Tuesday, November 27th. I am Chris Manning, your host from ThroughTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. And this is your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers from the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily local sports podcast network. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show. And you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Wright. On today's show, we are going to take a look at what went good for the Cavs and what went bad for the Cavs on November 27th in their loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. We're also going to do our weekly check-in on Jetty Osman and taking a look at what his biggest struggle this year, in my opinion, has been. The Cavs did lose this game, and it was close. They played hard. They lost 102-95. No David Nwaba due to knee soreness, joining George Hill, Sam Decker, and Kevin Love on the sidelines. And obviously, David Nwaba has been great for the team. So that was a loss. Larry Nance goes in the starting lineup as a starter-heavy game for the Cavs. Every starter played over at least 30 minutes. Tristan played 40, with only Kyle Korver and Jordan Clarkson coming off the bench to play more than 10 minutes. So really, seven guys did the bulk of the work in this game for the Cavaliers. Even though this was a loss, I will say that this was a positive performance for the Cavaliers. Broadly speaking, there are things that they could have done better, and I think a more experienced team led by a non-rookie point guard, maybe that has Kevin Love, I think maybe wins this game. But there's things to take away from this that are positive, and I think it does fit into the continuation of the last week where they played the Lakers really tough, they beat Philly, they beat Houston, and then almost beat a Wolves team. So starting with Kyle Korver, who I think was the star for the Cavs in this game, he was awesome. This was maybe the best I've seen him look all year. I don't know if this is something that Larry Drew was really asking him to do or that he decided he wanted to do, but this was a Kyle Korver that was seeking out shots. He was not just going to be content to dip around a screen and hope that the ball comes to him. He was aggressively coming off of screens and getting up shots. He was not really looking to drive or not looking to really feed other guys like we've seen him do of late. He was coming out and he was firing when he's coming around screens. His end night was statistically, I think, his best night of the year. 6-9 from 3, 7-12 from the field overall, a team high 22 points, hit a 3 late that gave them a chance to come back. And number one, I think this is good for the Cavs as a specific team because they don't have a lot of shooting. If you listen to the show, if you watch the Cavs play, you know that they are a mid-range heavy team. This is not a team that has particularly been good at making threes in a meaningful way, and they don't take a lot of them. Korver's the one guy that you can really rely on to do that. So for them to run these basic sets where someone sets a screen for him and he whips around the door, he comes off a flare screen or comes around a couple screens, that's all they're really doing to get him going. And it resulted in a season-high 6 threes, and that's a replicable thing to do. The Cavs are not running any particularly complex sets, and he was really aggressive in getting going. I also think if a team wants shooting, we're a ways away from the deadline, but if a team like Philly, if a team like the Lakers, if some team out there decides that they want to be in the market for a shooter like a Kyle Korver, Kobe Altman, this is the film I think you want to send them because he was awesome in this game and he was fantastic. This was also a good Rodney Hood game. He still has those bits of inconsistency, those bouts of up and down play. 2-7 from 3 is also a tough look for him, although he did hit two tough ones, and that was good to see. But overall, I thought he was really aggressive. This was a guy that finished 6 of 9 from inside the arc, which is a good number for him. A lot of mid-range, but still good shots for him. And he was aggressive, and he made his imprint on the game. He scored 20 points, and this was particularly important because Jordan Clarkson only had 4 on the night. He had a season-low 5 shot attempts, just 1 of 5 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3. So a very passive, weirdly Jordan Clarkson game. The Cavs really only have 2 guys right now, and 3 if you want to go Sexton, but two non-rookies that are really capable of creating their own shot. Hood's one of them, and he has so many games where he just disappears. And so for him, I don't know, where Clarkson just wasn't doing it, for him to step up and do that, I thought was really big. And one of the better Rodney Hood games we've seen, even if he's still a little bit inconsistent. Larry Nance Jr. was awesome as well. I thought this was probably his maybe best game of the year. 38 minutes from him back in the starting lineup. 5 of 10 from the field. Missed two threes, which is tough, but that's okay. It's a very new thing for him. 8 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. The 7 assists are a new career high for Larry Nance. I thought he was very patient. You're seeing him really read defense a little bit now, where guys are giving him space. Taj Gibson, for example, was sagging off of him and just throwing passes. He makes smart reads. He actually kind of thinks, sees things develop in a way that maybe Tristan doesn't or Zizic doesn't. It's not Kevin Love quality, but he's a good passer. He's a better passer than I think I realized when the Cavs acquired him last year. He also rebounded well in this game, and he had a couple nice blocks. He had one where he basically just stuffed Taj Gibson and swatted the ball away and pushed the ball up the floor as a result. So a really good Larry Nance game. He has had an up and down year. He did still miss a dunk in this game. You know, I think that ankle is at least good, but he has the worst net rating on the team right now, at least coming into Monday night's game. But this was a game that if you look at what he did and look how good he was, gives you optimism about where he might be headed from now. You would hope he's kind of rounding into form a little bit. Again, he continues to look more spry, look a little bit better. And him and Tristan continue to work as a duo, at least, which is a positive. But again, Larry Nance Jr., all around a really good game. But the passing is the thing, when you want to look at a thing that particularly stands out, his ability to kind of read and do some of the work that they don't have anyone else to do was really nice. Colin Sexton is largely in the bad of this game. You know, he was 5-19 from the field and whatnot. But I was actually okay with this performance, because you don't want to just view a rookie based on box score. He had a couple really good, I think, moments in this game. He had one pick-and-roll read in the first half where he was very patient, and he found Tristan Thompson for a lob as a result. He didn't pull up for the mid-range right away. He actually let the play develop. It's the first time I've seen him do that all year. He had 4 assists against 4 turnovers, so not a perfect night for him, but he was passing the ball a little bit more. Had the 7 rebounds as well, so he's still doing a good job rebounding as a guard. Took some threes, didn't make them, but at least he's taking them. And he hit a couple really tough mid-range shots as well in this game. This was not the quality that he had against Houston. This was not the quality we've seen him have in some other games. But he had some good moments. And really, I will link that pick and roll on my Twitter page at CWM Writes and retweet it on the Lockdown Cavs page. But just an excellent read from him, and probably my favorite assist he's had of the year. And that's the kind of stuff you're looking for a rookie. You want a guy who's really going to come in there, who's really going to at least make some improvements on reads and see that the game is slowing down for a little bit. And anecdotally, I think that assist was really the best example we've seen of it, that the game is starting to make a little bit more sense for Colin Sexton. And lastly, Tristan Thompson had another good game. A bit quiet, but I think he was very solid. 7-10 from the field, 11 boards, 4 on the offensive glass. Had the 1 block, had 3 assists as well. And he was really responsible, I think, for making Karl Anthony Towns uncomfortable. Cat's still at 21-10, but 9-19 from the field. He had at least 3 baskets that were basically just come off broken plays off turnovers, something that really doomed the Cavs in this game, at least a little bit. But he deserves credit for making Towns' life a bit uncomfortable. And he continues to just be really, really good. Handled the 40 minutes well. Handled everything that kind of got thrown at him well, kept them organized. Again, Tristan Thompson continues to be very, very, very good, and him and Nance's pairing tonight actually did work, even though I maybe would have gone small, and certainly I think Nwaba should start when he comes back at this point. But for one night, you know, that duo statistically has worked, and I thought it was solid against the Timberwolves, and maybe it doesn't work against a team that plays smaller and faster, but the Wolves played Towns, and they played Butler together, and they played Saric, so they can, I think, kind of get away with what they did there. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about the bad parts of this game and taking a look at Colin Sexton a little bit in there as well. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. This episode is sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing. It's heat on demand at the touch of a button. Action Heat is perfect for any friend or family on your holiday gift list. It's great for anyone who works outdoors, is a skier, a snowboarder, or anyone that just hates being cold. It provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, and hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Tee. It's available in men and women's selections. There are new styles and models just released for this winter season, and it's going to make those winter activities you love more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. In Cleveland, where it gets snowy, it gets cold on the lake, you'll be coming off the rapid downtown and freezing as you go to the queue. This is something you're going to want. It is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panel similar to a heated car seat. And think about a heated car seat. Think about how great that makes you feel when you're in a cold car. Today for Locked On Cavaliers listeners, we've got a special deal to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. Again, that's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON to save 20% off your first order. And we're back here on the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. So bad from the Cavs lost to the Wolves. You know, it's weird that I'm going to say this considering my opinion of him, but Jordan Clarkson didn't get up enough shots. The Cavs don't have a lot of guys that can really just generate offense. He's been really key to them just kind of staying in games of late. He took a season low of 5 shots in this game. The lowest total of his season to date was 10 shots. That's a big drop-off. That's a crazy drop-off for a guy like Jordan Clarkson, whose value is really derived from his ability to get up shots. It's something that I would like to evaluate when I do get a chance to kind of rewatch at least part of this game is, you know, were the Wolves game-planning this, or was this something where the Cavs didn't go to Clarkson? It did seem like he was anecdotally just on first watch, in which you'll notice different things different times you watch a game. But it seems like he was also standing a bit more statically, and then he didn't make a shot till the fourth when he really kind of was inserting himself. And maybe they were going to Korver. Maybe other guys just were playing better, so they rode those hands. That's possible. I think it's just weird that he only took 5 shots when they kind of need him to, at least for now, shoot more. And the offense overall just wasn't actually statistically very good. So offensive rating of 101.1 per cleaning glass, that's in the 25th percentile of the league over the year. They only shot 50% at the rim, and that's a big reason why the offense was so poor. It's still a mid-range heavy group, obviously. It's still a team that is kind of anemic offensively. I don't think they quite have any juice in a way that's really going to make them have a good offense at any point this year. It's a bottom-of-the-league offense right now. Still, took a lot of shots in the mid-range. I mean, 36% of their shots in the mid-range. Only 29% at the rim. At least they took a little bit more threes this game, up to 35%. So that's a bit of a better breakdown, but you want to see them get more shots at the rim. The Wolves actually took fewer shots at the rim, which, weirdly enough, but they at least converted it at a higher clip. This is just a group that is going to struggle to score. They make it a bit harder on themselves sometimes. No Kevin Love certainly doesn't help either, but they're going to have a hard time winning games that were winnable, and this was a winnable game when the offense is this bad. And as a team, you do not really generate shots and quality shots in a way that is sustainable and good. Jetty, we're going to talk about him more in the third segment because we're going to do our weekly check-in on him, but a bad night for him at the rim. That's going to be the big focus of what we talk about in the third section, but 3-12 from the field. He did have some nice threes in this game, had the 6 boards, 2 assists, but worst plus minus of any starter, played a starter's low 30 minutes, just wasn't quite a great game for Jetty. He really struggled, I think, to stay in front of Wiggins, to stay in front of Covington. Two guys just kind of both outplayed him. I think particularly Covington was just much better. Jetty did okay with Wiggins at times, but Wiggins hit a couple big shots in his face and got by him a couple times, and that's a learning experience for Jetty. And the stuff at the rim is just like, if he makes 2 of those shots at the rim, maybe this is a different game. Hits one of those other threes that were makeable, maybe this is a different game. So it's one of those nights where the word Jetty on the margins has a big impact, and just some of the things that he hasn't quite rounded out in his game yet kind of show up and cost the Cavs a little bit in the end. But that's fine because he's really young and the Cavs are bad. So Sexton, I think, will learn a lot from this game too, and it does come from bad because that's just how this works. So he had 3 plays that I identified in the third quarter that were really costly for the Cavs. Number one is at 4:28 in the fourth. He forces a layup up with the Cavs down 4, and when he missed, the Cavs are up by 6. At this point, he is on a fast break. He is on the right side of the court going up towards the basket. There are basically 3 Wolves that are going to end up collapsing on him at the rim. When he's driving, Kyle Korver is wide open on the left side of the wing. Remember this one, Kyle Korver's had a hot hand all night. Otherwise, he's one of the greatest shooters to ever play in the NBA. The right read in that situation, I think, is for him to make the pass. It's not one of those things you can really, I think, is great to ask about right post-game because it's just they haven't watched the tape and, you know, whatever. But I think Sexton should have made the pass there. But instead, he forces it. The Wolves get the ball back. They push the ball. They get up. They score and are up by six on the other end of the floor. That wasn't the crushing blow of the game. The Cavs did kind of push back a little bit here, but just a wrong read by Sexton. Korver was just so wide open. It was a simple pass. Again, maybe he didn't see him, but it's one of those things where he's going so hard, has tunnel vision sometimes that I think he cost himself a chance to really make a smart play and feed Korver on the wing because he was wide, wide open. And he would have had, I think, a lane to make the pass had he realized it before he got, you know, into the paint. Then about 2 minutes later at 2:18, he rushed into a mid-range shot that just came a bit late. Just kind of wasn't really a smart shot within what was going on right there. And he did get bailed out here by an offensive rebound and a Tristan Thompson make off that offensive rebound. But a rush shot, could have taken his time. The game was still close-ish at that point. If he makes a smart play there, it just benefits the Cavs. And he doesn't need to do everything all at once. It's one of the things with Sexton that is both really endearing about him and that is both frustrating about him is just how much he can just have tunnel vision and try to do it all at once by himself. He has to learn to be patient. And this is a play that I think really shows that. And then the last one is that with 1:33 to go, he's down by seven with the Cavs, and he just rushes into an offensive foul. He's just trying to do, again, and all at once, he's trying to solve things in an instant with a snap of his finger, and he causes an offensive foul. But Wolves get the ball back, kind of a wrap at that point. These mistakes are what happens when you're a rookie point guard and one who goes full goal all the time. This is life as a rookie point guard. He's going to make a lot of mistakes. He will make mistakes Wednesday against OKC. He will make mistakes, Friday against the Celtics and Kyrie. He'll make mistakes Saturday against Kyle Lowry. And Jeff Teague had some really big moments in this game where he really showed what a veteran he is and why Colin has a lot to learn still in terms of defending other point guards and making the right reads. But that will come in time, and rookie point guards take lumps like this. And I do think, again, he had my favorite assist of his career so far in this game, and that lobbed to Tristan Thompson in the first half. And the Cavs are asking a lot of him right now. There's no real big support system for him right now. In this particular game, it is worth noting that there's no Kevin Love. The Cavs don't really rely on Tristan Thompson to do offensive things. Ditto for Larry Nance. Korver is not an offensive initiator. Larry Drew chose Colin Sexton to do this more than Jetty Osman right now. Deservedly so, I think, based on how Jetty's played. Clarkson was, you know, MIA in this game. Rodney Hood, maybe he should be kind of doing some of this as well, but Sexton is going for this and asking for this, I think, and putting himself in that position as the team's point guard. He's getting these reps at a very early stage in his career. He's going to make mistakes, that's fine. He's going to keep making it work, and I think this is something he will look back on and be okay with, frankly. It's something he should learn from. And then lastly, a little disappointing that Ante Zizic gets 5 minutes in the first half, basically to fill in for a body for Nwaba because the Cavs kind of need to play another guy there, and just didn't do anything to get back in the game. Was just not good in his 5 minutes. Kind of disappointing for where he's at. I don't know if Canton would make sense for him. I don't know if there's a way to get him some reps, but he needs some work right now. I think the chances he's gotten, he's had a couple good moments, but he's been more disappointing than not. And that kind of showed up in this game. And defensively overall, the Cavs were just pretty bad. Turned the ball over a lot as well. Just the trademarks of a young team that is missing Kevin Love and is relying on a rookie point guard. A lot of those hallmarks, I think, showed up when you look at the stats in this game and look at the film of this game. We're going to take one last break, and then we're going to come back to talk about Jetty Osman and where he's at right now. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. And we are back. So the big concern, I think, with Jetty Osman this season is his shooting at the rim. For the year, he's shooting 48% at the rim this year. That's percolating the glass. That is around 9% lower than the league average of field goal percentage at the rim. He's just poor at it. He's one of the worst in the league at it right now. And he does it a lot. I mean, a good amount of his shots do come at the rim. It's not as if Jetty is completely avoiding the rim or isn't like this is like a small sample size. This is a guy, when you watch him play, he does get to the rim a lot and he does drive a lot. If you look at his cleaning the glass breakdown, 39% of his shots have come at the rim this year. That is by far, aside from three-pointers, that is the high, which is only up by 1%. That's the highest breakdown of his shot breakdown. He's one of the Cavs that doesn't love mid-range shot too. He does the long ones. He's kind of in love with a little bit, but he largely takes threes and he largely takes shots at the rim. And him not being able to finish at the rim changes what he could be as a player. If he cannot take a lot of shots at the rim and make them, his ability to be like a secondary creator on a good team is less interesting. It's something he really, I think, needs to develop. Now, he does draw fouls. That's the thing here that I find interesting about this. So he's averaging 5.8 drives per game. That's fourth on the team. And he has a decent number of and-ones. If you look at his shooting, if you look at his foul drawing for the year, in his first real NBA season, his shooting foul percentage is at 9.9%. That's in the 65th percentile among forwards for the year. I believe that's how they break this down. And then and-one percentage is at 27.8%. So that's pretty good. He is getting to the line, taking some free throws per game, and he's a decent free throw shooter at around 79%, although it would be good if he was a bit higher. And we know that correlation exists between free throw shooting and three-point shooting, so you wonder if he's ever going to be a consistent three-point shooter as well. Now, I also would posit that the Cavs' lack of real good spacing doesn't help either. I would also say that, like, when he's playing with two bigs, there's just not a lot of attention paid elsewhere to who's near the rim. Like, there just isn't a lot of room for him to work. Like, even Larry Nance, when he's out on the three-point line and they run plays that have him get the ball above the break, his defender's in the paint. Like, his defender's at the elbow. Jetty doesn't have a ton of room to work with, and he's not strong. If you see him on TV, like, that's a pretty good indication and a pretty good perhaps reality is a better word, which is like a pretty good indicator that this is a guy that is a little skinny. He's a little light right now. He's not a particularly big guy. He doesn't have like a ton of strength, so he gets beat up a little bit, I think, when he makes these drives, and he gets knocked off course more easily than, say, like a David Nwaba or someone like that who's really relies on driving and getting to the rim as part of his offensive game. So that's a concern as well. I don't think we know enough yet to really know what he is as a full-on offensive player, if we know that this is going to be a significant concern for him. But he's just bad at it right now. I think it's, for me, the one thing that I would be most concerned about for him. The outline of him being a good player is there. He has some really crafty finishes. But even if you go look at it, what he's done with Turkey and what he's done in overseas and just kind of his track record, this is kind of what he has been historically. He can take a lot of shots. He will get a lot of shots off. And not even like reckless shots, just like he's just been entrusted to be a lead creator. He gets to the line a decent amount and he makes things happen that way, but he's a little bit shaky in terms of actually finishing shots. When he gets to the rim, he just doesn't quite always finish at a clip, be it with Turkey, be it with the Cavs. That really makes you think he's going to be a great finisher. I mean, he's not going to be someone who dunks on people for either. So it's not as if the strength is really going to kind of benefit him there. I think for him, it could be strength. It could be just more experience. I think it's probably both. I think getting to the foul line will continue to be a useful thing for him. He doesn't really shy away from contact, which is good. I think getting Kevin Love back and creating some more spacing there, and long-term, getting some more opportunities for him would be good in terms of just having him room to create with different types of players. Long-term, I think he probably could settle into like a third creator is probably the ideal situation for him. It's way too early to know what his development curve fully looks like. We're very early in the season still, and he needs a lot of time, and things will change when Kevin Love gets back. But if you're looking at what I think the ideal situation for him is going to be, it's going to be really abandoning the mid-range as much as he can, becoming a good three-point shooter, a little more dead-eye in terms of catch-and-shoot opportunities, and he's good at those pull-ups too, and getting better at finishing at the rim, because that's where a lot of his value will come. If he can attack off the dribble and make it the right pass or get to the lane and finish, like, that's a good thing to have off of a guy like Colin Sexton, who's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. And if the Cavs are as bad as we think they're going to be, and let's say they get one of the guys from Duke, all those guys are going to want the ball in their hands. Zion and Cam Reddish in particular are two guys who need the ball in their hands quite a bit. And if they're lower in the lottery, maybe like Nasir Little is that same way. Maybe if Romeo Langford is the Cavs pick, like, that's kind of the same thing. I mean, look, if Kevin Love's around, he's going to have the ball a lot too. So Jetty's going to have to get good, I think, at really catch and shoot stuff. But if he's going to be raise his ceiling for me, I want to see him finishing closer to like at least above 50%, closer to like 60% at the rim. If he can finish through contact a little bit better, get a little craftier with his finishing, it's going to raise his value as an offensive player. He can cut a little bit more, and he'll get fouled more, and he'll continue to drive up his value, because I think that that's just the one thing I see is really weak right now for him. And I just want to, that would, if you're a cast and wondering what to track with Jetty for the next week, that's what I would be paying attention to. So that is going to be it for today's Locked On Cavaliers. Again, subscribe on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. If you have any mailbag questions for the next mailbag, you can tweet them to @LockedOnCavs or send them via email to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. If you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, that is a guaranteed way to get your question answered. We're going to be back tomorrow looking at Cavs Thunder, checking in on something positive going on with the Cavs right now, and more, perhaps a Facebook Live Q&A session. We may do that tomorrow. So I'll stay tuned for the social media feeds for that. And thank you for listening. The Cavs again lost to the Wolves on Monday night, but this has been Locked On Cavaliers for Tuesday, November 27th. I'm Chris Manning. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. Thanks again to Action Heat for sponsoring today's podcast. And we'll be back tomorrow. Cheers. Have a great Tuesday.